Welcome back to the second hour of the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere in the nation on that free Odyssey app. It is 410, 90 degrees on this Tuesday, July 15th, 2025. How's everybody doing today? Thanks for joining us. If you're just joining us, if you've stuck with us for the second hour, well, thanks for being here for the ride. So, millions of people receive a federal tax deduction for the interest they pay on home loans. Well, under President Donald Trump's new tax cut law, the OBBB Act, Big Beautiful Bill Act, many people for the first time could also claim a tax deduction for interest on their vehicle loans. Yes. And I've actually taken a look at this. Yeah, I'm not planning to buy a new car for another probably, I'm thinking 2 years it would be my time for a new car. But this may make the difference because this does phase out in 3 years. So the new tax break will be available even to people who don't itemize their deductions. So if you take the standard deductions, you could still write off your vehicle loan interest. But there are some caveats that could limit its reach. The vehicles must be new, not used. They must be assembled in the U.S., or final assembly part in the U.S., and the loans must be issued no sooner than this year, to list just a few qualifications. So you'll be able to do it this year for 2025 when you do 2025 taxes next year and it'll be early 2026. So here's some things to know about the new auto loan interest tax deduction. Now, this was a campaign promise that was brought up on the campaign trail, and it's a good idea. Trump pledged while campaigning last year to make interest on car loans tax deductible. He said it would make car ownership more affordable and stimulate massive domestic auto production, which they're saying it just very well might do that. The idea made it to the big tax cut bill passed by Congress, which Trump signed into law on July 4th. The law allows taxpayers to deduct up to $10,000 of interest payments annually on loans for new American-made vehicles from 2025 through 2028. It applies to cars, motorcycles, sports utility vehicles, minivans, vans, and pickup trucks weighing less than 14,000 pounds, a threshold referred to as light vehicles. But it only applies to vehicles purchased for personal use, not for fleets or commercial purposes. So one of the misnomers, well, you know, he's giving all his billionaire friends tax places. Well, billionaires lease vehicles under their corporations. They buy vehicles under their corporations. They don't very rarely do it personally. So this takes that out of the equation. The tax break can be claimed starting in 2025 income tax returns, but the deduction phases out for individuals with income between $100,000 and $150,000, or joint taxpayers with incomes between $200,000 and $250,000. So if you're married filing jointly and you make over $250,000, it starts to phase out. Again, middle class tax break for buying a new vehicle. Assembled, final assembly point here in America. All good points. Those earning more cannot claim the tax break. It says millions of buyers could benefit. U.S. automobile dealers sold 15.9 million new light vehicles last year, a little over half which were assembled in the U.S., according to Cox Automotive. It says around 60% of retail vehicles are financed with loans. After excluding fleet and commercial vehicles and customers above the income cutoff, an estimated 3.5 million new vehicle loans could be eligible for the tax break this year if purchasing patterns stay the same, said chief economist at Cox Automotive. Well, here's the thing. I plan on waiting 2 years to buy a new car, but because of this tax break, I'm thinking, hey, do I want to buy one the end of this year? Do I want to buy one next year? So it's already altered my thinking of when I plan on purchasing a new vehicle. Because of that tax break, because it will be a write-off of a couple thousand dollars. So, is it worth it? I don't know. I'll have to run the numbers to see if it's worth it. You know, the way I finance my cars, the way I pay for my cars, and I rarely finance them except if it's very low or 0% interest from the manufacturer. If I'm not paying for a car, if I don't have a car payment, like now, we don't have a car payment. Whatever my last car payment was, I still set that aside into a savings account or a CD or whatever it needs to be in, where I can make a little more interest on it. And it sits there, and every month, that's that same amount. So if my car payment was $500 a month, that $500 every month, if I have a car payment or not, goes into an account. And this way, when it's time to buy a car, and again, I haven't had a car payment in almost a year, so I have a year's worth of that set aside. You get two more years of that set aside, and then whatever money I want to put down, in addition to that, you know, the majority of the car is already paid. So either my monthly payments are extremely low, or I can get a deal at 1.9% interest rate or 2.9% or 0% interest rate for some of them have 0% for 72 months now. So, but it's already altering my view of when I should buy a car, and I'm sure others as well. Now, the assembly plant, not the automaker headquarters, is what matters. The tax break applies to vehicles where their final assembly is in the U.S., no matter where the company makes making them is headquartered. All Tesla vehicles sold in the United States are assembled in this country. But so are all Acura brands, luxury models of Japanese automaker Honda as well. Last year, 78% of all Ford vehicles sold in the U.S. were assembled in this country, according to Cox Automotive. But customers wanting tax breaks will need to pay attention to the specific models. While the Ford Mustang is assembled in Michigan, the Mustang Mach-E is built in Mexico. General Motors assembles all of its Cadillacs in the U.S., but just 44% of its Chevrolets sold last year were assembled in the U.S., and just 14% of Buicks, according to Cox Automotive. That's lower U.S. assembly rate than Honda, 60%, Toyota, 52%, or Nissan, 48%, which is also all headquartered in Japan. So you have to pay attention to where the final assembly of your vehicle is. That's going to make a difference. But the numbers I just rambled out for the different automakers I just told you, there is a wide variety depending on the types of vehicles you like. The average new vehicle loan is about $44,000 financed over 6 years. That's just averages now today. Interest rates vary by customer, but so will the savings. In general, tax deduction will decline after the initial year because interest payments on loans are front-loaded while principal payments grow in the back end. At a 9.3% interest rate, and I hope you're not paying that, an average new vehicle buyer could save $2,200 on taxes over 4 years. The tax savings would be less on a loan at 6.5%, which is the rate figured into calculation by the American Financial Service Association Consumer Credit Trade Industry. So that's about the average, 6.5, I guess they're gathering. Some people will also see a reduction in state income taxes, whereas the tax deduction for home loan interest can be claimed only by people itemizing their tax returns. Congress wrote the deduction for auto loan interest so it can apply to all taxpayers, including those claiming the standard deduction. On a tax form, the auto loan deduction will come before calculations of the taxpayer-adjusted growth income. That's an important distinction because many states use taxpayers' federal adjusted gross income as the starting point to figure out their state income tax. If that income figure is lower, it could reduce your state taxes owed as well. Now, if this boosts sales or not, that's open for discussion. The Bowden, Scarf, Ford, and Kent, Washington customers started asking about the auto loan tax deduction before Congress even had taken the final vote on it, General Manager said. He also decided to promote it in a dealer's website. The website ribbon exclaims, car loan tax deduction now available. If you're a car dealer, if you're not taking advantage and promoting this, you're silly, because you should be. And again, just me personally, I'm probably in the market for a new car in the next 2, maybe 3 years. 2 years is probably more realistic. Does this expedite my looking? It already has. I've already come to the conclusion that maybe I want to start looking sooner because of this tax break. And again, it's not a great deal of money, but I think we all don't turn our noses at $2,200 or $2,000 or whatever that may be. Now, it all depends on your credit score, obviously, what you're paying in interest rates. But if you say your credit score has been beat up, you know, I have a pretty perfect credit score. And just because I'm very careful of having any debt, I don't like debt. I live my life with safe investments. I take safe avenues for my money. And I just don't like having high interest rates. You know, I did away with my mortgage as soon as I could. Don't like to have car loans unless it's a deal where I'm working with their money, pretty much 0% interest or something like that. Or one of the deals, even 1.9 or 2.9, you're basically playing with their money because I can make more money than that in a high yield savings account or CD. So why put it towards there when I could use their money? So it's already altered my personal thinking. So I would assume that there's thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of other people out there. And maybe your credit score has been beat up and you are subject to those higher interest rates. That's just more you can deduct, more you could possibly save on your federal taxes, more you can save even a little bit on your state taxes if it's used the same way with your adjusted gross income from the feds. So here, another thing out of the bill that I think will benefit everyday Americans, and again, married couples that make under $250,000. So is it perfect, this bill? Obviously not. No bill's perfect. No bill's ever going to be perfect. But there's a lot of benefits in here that they just don't want you to know about. And if you buy new cars, which I do every couple of years, because one of the things, I didn't buy my first new car till 1997. That was the first new car I ever bought. And I promised myself after that every 5 to 8 years, I was going to have a new car because I didn't have to worry about car. Because all my life, I had to worry about, is this car going to start? Is this car going to break down? Is something going to go wrong? Is something going to happen to my wife while she's driving? Is something going to happen to my kids while they're driving? Well, my kids are all grown now, and they pretty much have their own vehicles to worry about. But, I want something that I know is going to be stable every time I turn the key. So a benefit to everyday Americans, it looks like to me. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. So this next story coming out of California, I'm going to check this off as mark me not surprised. A California professor was one of the ones arrested for allegedly tossing tear gas canisters at ICE agents during the raid on the cannabis farm. Now, mind you, there was 361 arrests for illegal migrant workers, including unaccompanied minors and illegal juvenile workers at this farm, trafficked individuals, and individuals with numerous sex offenses that were working there, along with these vulnerable children. But you have this California professor who allegedly chucked a tear gas canister at ICE agents during the raid. Jonathan Anthony Caravello, a math and philosophy professor at California State University, Channel Islands, was arrested by federal agents conducting the raid at the Glasshouse Farms in Ventura County on Thursday. U.S. Attorney Bill Esiely posted on X that Caravello was arrested for throwing a tear gas canister at law enforcement. And the mugshot is literally priceless for this college professor. Now, again, he's innocent till proven guilty. These are just alleged charges. Esiely said Caravello was charged with violation of 18 U.S.C. 111 for allegedly assaulting, resisting, and impeding certain officers and employees according to the federal law. U.S. attorney also denied claims that the educator was kidnapped by federal agents, as per what his school statement was. Yes, the University of California school statement says their employee was kidnapped by federal agents. Not arrested, kidnapped. On Friday, the California Faculty Association shared that Caravello was kidnapped by federal agents after protesters and law enforcement clashed during Thursday raid. The Post claimed that four masked agents dragged Jonathan away to an unmarked reason without identifying themselves, without giving the reason for arrest, and without disclosing where they were taking him. However, a criminal complaint obtained by the Valley News revealed dozens of protesters attempted to obstruct the execution of a high-risk search warrant at the Glasshouse Farms. The affidavit claimed that Caravello was seen holding a megaphone, walking along a yellow police tape, loudly playing a siren sound towards agents. Protesters later began throwing rocks at government vehicles, causing large-scale damage, including broken windows, broken side view mirrors, and frame damage to the vehicles. As the escalation continued, agents deployed tear gas among the protesters to disperse them. Caravello was allegedly caught on an agent's body camera footage attempting to kick the canister but missed. Caravello turned around, ran towards the canister, picked it up, and threw the canister overhand back at the Border Patrol agents, the complaint claims, all caught on the officer's body-worn camera. That's going to be fun to watch in court. The Border Patrol agent reported that the canister was thrown at law enforcement and recalls that the canister came within approximately feet of law enforcement officers' heads. Caravello then allegedly left the scene, but about 2 hours later, the individual matching his description returned wearing different clothing, which could be seen in a court as an admission of guilt. Knowing you did something wrong prior, why would you need to change your clothes? Now, he'll probably say, well, there was tear gas deployed. I was changing my clothes because of that. But let the jury hear that, right? After determining that the individual who threw the canister, two Border Patrol agents attempted to arrest him before 6 a.m., according to the criminal complaint, and he then resisted arrest again, grabbing the Border Patrol agent's leg and refusing to let go. Again, one of your college professors, ladies and gentlemen, from the California State University. Go figure. And again, his mugshot is priceless. Basically looks like some crazed rocker from the 70s. Sort of like a Geddy Lee on drugs. Almost. That's what the mugshot looks like. It's 4:32 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's the point of the show where we honor our heroes here at home and law enforcement who made the ultimate sacrifice for you and I. And today we have six of them from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania on this day, July 15th. I'm going to start with Parole Supervisor Ronald D. Spangler, Jr., Pennsylvania Parole Board in Pennsylvania. He was killed in a vehicle crash near mile marker 98.8 on southbound I-81 in Pine Grove Township. We have Police Officer Ross F. Brackett, Philadelphia Police Department, in 1968, was shot and killed while attempting to arrest a subject following a robbery in progress call at 52nd Street and Walton Avenue. Police Officer George V. Jacobs, Philadelphia Police Department, in 1966, was shot and killed when him and his partner were critically wounded by three men when they stopped them from running a red light on Snyder Avenue near Broad Street. As they walked up to the car, a 22-year-old passenger shot them both and fled with his two 17-year-old companions. Police Officer Sanford Spencer Smith, Philadelphia Police Department, in 1950, was killed when his motorcycle was struck by a car at 30th and Chestnut Street. He was chasing a speeder at the time of the crash. We have Sergeant Joe B. Champion, Pennsylvania State Highway Patrol, in 1936, was killed in an automobile crash while on patrol in Middlesex Township, Butler County. Another vehicle struck his patrol car. He succumbed to his injuries 2 days later. And Patrolman Stephen Janeda, Pittsburgh Bureau of Police in Pennsylvania, 1929. Succumbed to injuries suffered as a result of striking a stone wall in the 1200 block of Carter's Avenue on July 13th, 1929. And those are our six from here in Northeast Pennsylvania. Looking at some text messages coming in. Somebody said that you know, they agree with me, but that college professor will wear that mugshot with a badge of honor for his future mindless college students. Hopefully not, but the state of California may not. But federal dollars speak volumes. And if they start withholding stuff like that from these institutions, it will force their hand on what they can and can't do as far as supporting this. But it's amazing that professor's union all of a sudden put a statement out in support of him being arrested. Could you imagine that? I guess this day and age we do. It's 4:40 here at WILK, time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It is 4:46, 90 degrees on this Tuesday, July 15th, 2025. It's time for Today in History, because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we've been? What do we have today? Let's see. 1979, Crisis of Confidence, speech by President Jimmy Carter. In a televised address, President Carter delivered what became known as the Crisis of Confidence speech. While it was meant to address the nation's energy crisis and the general malaise, it was controversial. Some praised Carter's honesty, others saw it as blaming the American people. It marked a turning point in his presidency and is often cited as a political misstep that hurt his reelection prospects. I would say there were more things than that hurt his prospects. 2006. Wow, 2006. Pretty much yesterday, right? Well, Twitter was launched publicly. While the exact public debut unfolded over several months, July 15th, 2006, is considered Twitter's official launch date. The platform went on to become one of the most influential tools in politics, social movements, and media in the 21st century, now known as X, right? But 2006, 19 years old, right? 19 years old. Now we go back in time a little bit, 1806. The Zebulon Pike sets out to explore an American West. U.S. Army officer Zebulon Pike began his expedition to explore the southern portion of the Louisiana Purchase. He would later discover what became known as Pike's Peak in present-day Colorado. That must have been some exploration, huh? Some notable birthdays. Clement Clark Moore, 1779, American scholar and poet, best known for writing A Visit from St. Nicholas, more famously known as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. 1779 that was written, and to this day. Still read it on Christmas Eve every year. Now that I have grandchildren, even more so. Julian Bream, 1933, the British. Though British, this famed classical guitarist had significant influence on American classical music and inspired many U.S. musicians. Let me see. Some legal and political notes. 1971, Nixon announces nomination of William Rehnquist to the Supreme Court. Future Chief Justice Rehnquist will serve on the court for 33 years and played a major role in shaping its conservative direction. And on a cultural note, 1958, Hail Rock and Roll. The Billboard charts were dominated by rock and roll artists like Elvis Presley and Chuck Berry. The cultural shift in music was changing America's identity, an early sign of the generational divide of the 1960s. So that's pretty much it for today in history. You want to call or text at 570-883-0098. Get involved with the conversation. It's looking at the assaults on Border Patrol agents, an increase of 830%. And that's just utterly disgusting and ridiculous. It truly is. And it's by this rhetoric that's out there. And I'm glad some leaders like Secretary Kristi Noem and others who are chastising the media, chastising those in politics, to saying you're attacking individual law enforcement officers for enforcing the laws that they had nothing to do with passing. I mean, that's the bottom line here. And it's asked time and time again. If you do not like the laws, if you want the laws changed, propose something different. And other than being obstructionists, other than being the opposition, Democrats have not come forth with anything. Now, obviously, they don't have majority in either the House or the Senate, so it probably wouldn't go very far. But they would have the media's narrative, right? They could get in front of the media and say, hey, here's our plan to change immigration reform. Border security is pretty much coming into line, right? Extra funding for Border Patrol, extra funding for border security. They are removing individuals that should have never been here and that for the past 5 years flooded in by the millions. That needs to be corrected. But otherwise, our immigration reform is, our immigration system is still broken. There needs to be a plan to allow proper, vetted, legal immigrants to come in. And that plan needs to start. It needs to start yesterday. And it hasn't. And that conversation needs to be having. And it behooves this administration, it behooves the Republicans at this point to say, okay, well, here's phase two. Here's what we're going to do. Are we going to increase work visas for migrant visas that are vetted and coming in the proper way? You work in agriculture, you need more migrant workers. Are there migrant workers to fill those positions? Is it going to be done right and legally? Let's figure it out and figure out what we need. Let's look at how much we can take economy-wise into our nation. How much can our schools, our infrastructure, our housing accommodate? Now, that's a hard number because there are millions that should not be here right now. And they are here. And they need to correct the taxpayer, the legal taxpayer, footing the bill for them to stay in hotels, to pay for their supplements and meals, their health care, and everything else that the taxpayer has been burdened with, especially in cities like New York, Chicago, and Massachusetts, and Boston, and other places. They need to correct that. But while these cities continue to cover, I mean, you just had the mayor of Los Angeles saying, because of the ICE raids, we're going to have to give gift cards to our illegal migrants because they're afraid to come out of their house. Really? That's going to pass muster with the taxpayer in L.A. after they've just had their entire community destroyed by a wildfire? Can't get permits to rebuild their own house? Can't afford to rebuild their own house? It's strange times. Strange times indeed. It is 4:53 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio. Let's go to the phone now. We have Lee from Scranton. Lee, how are you?
I'm really good, Rob. You know, I wanted to take the opportunity to call and say that I think we need to suspend immigration into this country for a period of years, maybe 20 years, until we get all the people out of our country that shouldn't be here. And we settle the people that are here that are going to stay. I think that we've been overrun for a long period of time, and I think that America needs to invest its time in its own citizens and its own country for a period of time to, you know, get our bills paid, fix our schools, fix our infrastructure, you know, rebuild our industrial base. And, you know, I don't know how people feel about that, but it's not the first time that that would have happened. I think that, you know, we are a welcoming country as far as immigration is concerned, but I think the last administration went way overboard, and our country's a complete mess right now.
I agree. There needs to be a process. As far as stopping it or halting it, I don't think that would be good for the nation, our economy, or anything. I mean, we are a nation of immigrants, legal immigrants, that need to be done properly, and we need to be welcoming for that as much. But, you know, that needs to be done the proper way, and that's not what's been done, you know, over the past years.
Well, it's the immigration has been paused in this country before, and I just think that, you know, it's time to really take a look around. Our country's a complete mess. You know, Trump's in Pittsburgh now trying to pump AI and trying to reindustrialize our country. And with the complete mess that the local politicians and, you know, politicians on the national level have made out of our country, we need some time to heal and gel as a society again. We've got a host of issues and problems that we're not willing to address. The collapse of our educational system, overwhelming poverty and homelessness all over the place, drug problems. You know, we've got to get away from the thing that we invite immigrants into our country for cheap labor, because that's what's happened here. That's one of the reasons why the Democrats opened the border, and all it did was harm the working class of people. We've got to not be so naive as to think that people in their own part of the world shouldn't fix their own countries. Okay, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't allow people to come here, because we are a nation of immigrants. But, you know, there's countries that have a host of problems that their own people won't solve. And then we bring people here that destabilize our country. And, you know, the Biden administration did bring a lot of people into our country that killed a lot of our citizens, maimed a lot of our citizens, and wanted to live off the system. They wanted to come to America where the streets were paved in gold, where the government would hand you money and life would be fine. But you know what, Rob? We've got to do something for our own citizens, and we've got a host of problems. And I appreciate your opinion, but I think you should look into our history. And we haven't always invited people into the country, because when you take a layer of immigrants, they have to nationalize. They have to become natural citizens. They have to get the habits and the culture. They've got to accept it. And if you allow unfettered immigration to the country, you could possibly lose the thing that makes America what America is.
Well, we've changed our immigration policies. We went from European based to a more South American based, Southern based, Mexican based, Central and South America based. It needs to be looked at to what's best for our nation, and that's why I'm saying we need to look at things like our economy, what could be sustained, our job market, what's needed and what could be sustained, our housing market. That one of the things I said at the beginning of this was all that needs to be looked at. Lee, I got to leave it there because I'm up against the. Okay. Time. I appreciate your call. It's 5 o'clock here at WILK.